In this episode, we get to talk to a driver who's seen his stock rise within the last few seasons and is an official very much in demand. We'll talk to Scott Greenwood in this episode of TWBC Podcast.
The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC Podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this edition of the TWBC Podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and I'm glad to have the pleasure of Scott Greenwood's company. He is driving at the Lake 38 Pro, which is where we're recording this episode from. How are you doing there, Scott?
Doing good, Tony. This is what a great weekend to come down here with Keith Albritton and this community that he's created down here is phenomenal. Beautiful lake, and just honored to be here.
All right, then. Let's see if we can go back to the beginning. I mean, how did you get involved in this sport, and where has it kind of taken you?
Oh, it started way back, you know, in Arkansas on Lake Hamilton as a kid. I'm one of five kids, and, you know, my dad learned to ski when he was real young down in South Arkansas on the Ouachita River. And I guess he fell in love with it and wanted to be on the lake. And as we got, you know, and all the kids were, you know, early in life, he bought a lake house on Lake Hamilton, and we all just started skiing.
Mm-hmm.
Recreational skiing.
So how did that kind of dovetail its way into the tournament scene?
Well, my dad and, you know, all the boys were all very competitive, so we skied, you know, it was like who could clear the wakes, jump across two wakes and do all the stuff and be the best skier in the cove. And my older brother, a friend of my older brother's, took him to a water ski tournament. And after a tournament, he came back and said, "This is the greatest thing. I need to take you to a tournament." And so we went to a water ski tournament in 1979 in Russellville, Arkansas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah. That's kind of a fun story to tell.
Indeed. Let's we'll put that to aside for a moment. Let's find out a little bit more about that the first few tournaments that you skied in Arkansas, because I mean, this was late 1970s, early 1980s, you know, and things were a lot different there. I mean, there are folks that were still riding on wooden skis at that point, you know, with slaloms, you know, and doing tricks on pairs and what have you, you know. So give us a little bit of an idea of what the historical aspect was in that regard.
Well, there was a tournament on Lake Dardanelle in Russellville, and it was public water. And my dad took me up there. My older brother was, you know, skied in one tournament. It was a novice tournament. And we rolled up there, and my dad had bought me a Tech One Cypress Garden Ricky McCormick Signature Series. I've told this story several times, we got there a little late, and they all the junior boys, it was the 12 and under junior boys, they had taken them down the highway in the back of a truck and then turned right on another highway and dropped them off in the middle of nowhere off this highway on a little starting area where you'd have to swim out into the water and get your ski on and go. Well, they were prepping me. One of the guys from the local club had drawn in the dirt the ski course.
Oh.
Because I had no idea what this was. So he was drawing little dots in the sand and telling me how to go through the gates and around the buoy and get there a little early and doing all that. And so they went through that a little bit. And I'm looking out into the lake, and it didn't look like anything other than buoys everywhere. I didn't understand any of it other than they kind of drew it out for me. So they take me down to the starting dock. My dad drives me down there.
Mm-hmm.
I get to the starting dock, and I walk out there with my Tech One, and there's about six or eight kids. And one of those kids is Wade Cox. He was 10 at the time. I was 12.
Oh, wow.
So I walk down there, and they immediately look at me and go, "What are you starting?" And back then it was all long line. And I said 28, because my brother thought, you know, 28 seemed pretty easy for him when he skied in his first tournament. And every one of those kids took a step back, like, "Oh my gosh, this guy's going to start at 28. So I realized that
here we go.
My dad was already gone, so I couldn't try to re-strategize. So I was looking around and going, "What are y'all starting at?" And they were all going to start at a speed slower than mine. So I was immediately pretty nervous. But in time, just kind of looking around and sizing up the kids, I decided to start at 26. So here I was at my first tournament, didn't know what was going on, didn't have my dad with me, and I'm sitting on the dock with all these young kids. And,
wow.
And it was an interesting experience.
Indeed, indeed. And I mean, that experience of skiing in those tournaments, you know, I mean, from the youngest age all the way up, it earned you a spot in collegiate water skiing with one of the better teams at that time, the NLU Indians, right?
Well, you know, I at that time, you know, we skied, you know, I skied that tournament. Actually, I made two full passes the first time I ever saw the course.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a 26, a 28, and I came back. You know, back then they didn't sit the boat down.
No,
and
of course not.
I made three at 30.
Yeah.
And that was, Wade ran three at 32. And my joke is, I was six buoys behind Wade Cox.
At that
time. In our entire life, I think that was as close as I ever got to Wade in a score. But over the next several years, as Wade and Kyle Tate from Arkansas and Bobby Gibson, some of these guys that were skiing, they had Mastercraft boats and they had lakes to go to, they were continuing to improve and ski on courses and had a great place to practice. We were still going back to the public lake, skiing behind an outboard boat, and for many years still there, I was just skiing as a recreational skier and then going to a few novice tournaments here and there. So, Tony, by the time I got into high school, I was able to kind of make some friends, and I was mowing yards, working for my dad in the construction business. I would make some friends and pay for ski rides in the local ski club. So by the time I got to college, I really hadn't made my mark. I kind of walked on to the team in Monroe as a B-teamer.
Wow.
So you might not know that backstory because you kind of came in a little later.
Yeah, I did.
And so I earned my way onto that team just kind of through hard work and merit.
Indeed, indeed. And probably one of the best things, if not the best thing that happened to you in that whole college experience was, did you meet your wife?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
kind of tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, I had been in school for a few years, and she had transferred in from I think Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And we met there, and we didn't immediately date. It was a year or so after.
Bit coincidental, considering we're at Lake 38, which is just down the road from Tallahassee.
Yeah, yeah. But no, that was a pivotal moment in my life, for sure, to meet Jane, and then a great time there in Monroe. And, you know, Dean Murphy was a big mentor for all of us, and great relationships with Shannon Murphy, his daughter, and I were really, really good friends, and skiing with the likes of Shay Langley and Brian Swenson and Fritz Harsh and just so many great Danny
and Sheedy. One of the Armstrongs, I believe.
Rafe was ahead of me. He was already gone by the time I got there. Zach Morgan was still there. Just so many great skiers, and that's when I just started skiing. It was all low lying fruit at that moment, so mm-hmm. I was able to kind of start going up the ladder a little bit with the skiing and. And I was just a hard worker, Tony. That's how I got kind of...
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a hard worker to be involved in construction. Yeah, you actually run your own construction company, is that right?
Yes, yes. Me and my wife.
Yeah, you and your wife over there in Scott, Arkansas, you know. So that's always useful to remember the hard graft and all of those years to get you to the point where you wanted to be in the sport of water skiing. Now a lot of that graft and hard work has transitioned to driving now because you're a man in demand.
Oh, I don't know, Tony. Thank you. But yeah, it's fun. I really, really enjoy it. I don't know if I ever like meant to be in the driver's seat like that. But, you know, collegiately, it seemed like I was in the boat a lot. Maybe I just had a little attention to detail. I'm not sure what it was, but over the years, I never really, you know, I got my driver's rating collegiately. You know, we were driving back in those days, hand driving, but and then there always seemed to be a spot that needed to be filled in the community of water skiing around Tri Lakes or around our place, putting on record tournaments. So you just eventually, you know, get your regular and then your senior, and then I really enjoy it. But I'm not sure if I intended to be
not taking it at this level or actually been around in a scene where I mean, there are some great drivers out there. There's Will Bush, there's Les Todd, Becky Lathrop, and all of those. But it seems to me that there seems to be a lack of decent drivers coming through from among the younger generation. And not I don't know whether you agree with that, but I mean, so far as the better drivers in the country, I can count you, Will, Becky, Les Todd, and maybe one or two others in that same elite category, I would say.
I think there's quite a few more, Tony. There's some incredible drivers out there. And, you know, Chris Wharton right now, you're seeing him drive a lot of events. And he does
your future son-in-law.
Yeah, he does an incredible job. And you had Alex King that got to drive last year at the LCQ and is doing an amazing job. I could probably list several more. There's a lot out there. And thanks to the mentorship and leadership of some of the guys that you're talking about with Les and Will and Mario that have you see Manuel that's driving a lot of events.
Manuel Domini from Italy.
So I think there's a lot of people out there that are doing a phenomenal job. And we have a lot of tools now that help us.
And Ricardo Bottas as well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I
think there's a lot more out there and a lot of folks. And
they just have to broaden their horizons and their visions beyond the American shores. For sure. But I mean, we'll continue on a little bit with driving because, I mean, you are one of the better drivers. There's certainly one of the more visible drivers. Now, let's go back a little bit to hand driving. I mean, back in those days, I mean, it's almost unfathomable these days that you have to manipulate the throttle to do anything in the course. Now you just mash the throttle, it'll go up to speed, and the GPS and the software takes over. But back in those days, in the 80s, 90s, and just a little bit beyond, everything was down to the driver.
Yeah, it was a lot different. At times, even hectic, Tony. Short lakes, like just on the bayou when we skied there, it was real short on the levee end, and a lot of it was trying to maybe utilize a tack or the tachometer or just listening to the engine, the sound of the engine, to try to listen for that sound of where that speed is to try to get it up to speed because we're waiting on the air gauge to move, which is really slow. Mm-hmm. The air gauge was that speedometer that had a really slow swing to it.
Those were, of course, were some nightmares. Yeah. Those air guides.
Yes, and then just the throttle, using the throttle and the steering, kind of in unison. It seemed to be kind of a rhythm that you would get into as you drive down the slalom course or through the jump, and it was very fun. And I remember when cruise control came in, when a lot of the older drivers wanted to quit because they were taking away some of their ability to drive.
Yeah, some of their skill set. You know, we're talking like perfect pass, AccuSki.
Yes.
And then things started. They held the market more so perfect pass for several seasons, and then it transitioned to more GPS-based speed control with zero off. I mean, how have you handled that general transition?
As a skier, I thought it was great because it just created a lot more consistency. And for a driver, it allowed you to focus more on one thing. So I believe like our vision and our system that we put together to drive, we can zone in on just steering and how we want to facilitate what the skier is trying to accomplish.
Is there much of a difference between the boats? I mean, when you step into a Malibu or you step into a Nautique or you step into a Mastercraft, are there certain things that you kind of check off on a checklist and like say, I'm in a Malibu now.
Yes.
Let's adjust the seat. Let's try and get it look comfortable or other boats. Kind of give us a sense of where that is.
You know, it's, I'm a Mastercraft guy.
And, of course.
And folks are like, try to put you a little bit in a bubble, and there's things about every one of these boats that are great. All the boats are great, the competition's good, and each boat has things that they do really well, and there's things in each boat that you have to prepare yourself for. Some boats are a little more are better tuned when they're balanced well, and other boats just your seating position or the weighting of the front or the back or whatever. So I think when you get in different boats, you just, you know, the steering, the linkage feels different in different boats. So you're definitely, your input with a skier is different. And the way, the attitude of that boat, how it moves through the turn and the release is different. So understanding those boats and then going from boat to boat, you have to kind of reacquaint yourself with those boats. So what I try to do is when I drive an event, I'm usually there a day or two early so I can kind of get, if I haven't been in the Nautique or the Malibu, it gives me a time to get reacquainted with the rhythm of that boat and how it works.
And that, I mean, that especially is correct for slalom, but you're a pretty darn good jump driver as well, because, I mean, you're going to be driving at LA Night Jam, which is the next water ski pro tour event after the conclusion of Lake 38. And this is an especially poignant event for you because of your relationship with the guy that's running the competition, Jay Bennett, right?
Yes, Jay is for sure a long, long time friend. He's brought me in and has mentored me over the years, and it has allowed me to be involved in the driving for years down there. And it's been a great ground for me to express my interest in driving. But in that event, Chris is actually driving the men, Chris Wharton.
Oh, he is?
I think Chris Eller will be driving the women. So I'll be working with Keith Albritton on the slalom side at this event.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Okay. So you're kind of taking a step away from jumping. But yeah, if you are in a position to drive the jump event, kind of what kind of things typically go on in your mind whenever you set yourself up with a particular boat in jump? Because certainly when you have engine power issues, when you have a whole slew of other issues that deal with the jump event, maybe you can expand upon that, you know. But tell us what you do to prepare for driving jump, and especially pull in some of the big hitters such as Garcia, Dodd, Kruger, and Poland to this day.
Yeah, what we do.
But let's not forget the women either as well. Strolsover and Morgan and the others. Daniel Skyer and I hate to miss all the others, but yeah.
Don't forget Brittany Greenwood, right?
Absolutely, your daughter.
I have such a fun relationship with Chris Wharton, because we're pretty much driving nerds. We love talking and getting really deep into the feel and the concept of what we're doing. So we have a lot of conversation. And at that event, we'll immediately, if he's in the boat, we'll immediately be talking about what kind of numbers we're getting, what are we feeling with the boat, and any adjustments we need to make. There's quite a few adjustments you can make in a boat, whether it's the rudder or if we need to adjust some of the numbers we're using in jump to get the kind of output that we want to give to the skiers. So immediately we'll look at that output when we get there. When we start driving practice, Chris will give input. We'll talk about it. We've done some neat things. Will Bush has been amazing to teach us some things, from just looking at oil levels to taking out extra weight out of the boat to just make sure those boats are optimal so the skiers can have a great opportunity to ski.
And of
well.
Course, you're running a three blade prop for the majority of jump events as well.
The Mastercraft has an approved three blade prop, and that seems to be the prop that does well and performs well for the Mastercraft boat.
And I mean, and obviously, once you've got the boat settled down, then it comes down to you, the driver. You know how hard the driver takes you right off the gut, you know, and how much steering input that's necessary to actually keep that boat. Would it be correct to say straight, or would it be in a path that safely puts the jumper on that ramp?
Kind of my joke about. People ask me about driving, and I always say all they want to do is go fast, right? Like Ricky Bobby, yeah. So they just want to go fast. A slalom skier, when he gets his hand on the handle, he wants to be to the first wake or center line, whatever they want to think of. They want to be there efficiently and quickly. So facilitating that is what we think about as drivers. And jumping is the same. It's a bit more input, because some skiers, you'll have the likes of Taylor or Jack Critchley or sometimes Toadie, that they come in really, really hard out of the turn. And so that anticipation to where you're trying to make sure that you can facilitate for them, as opposed to maybe a Dorian or a Freddy that is going to be much lighter on the line through the turn. So, you know, how you're setting or setting that boat up for that turn is, and understanding how that boat and that hull is going to walk through that turn and try to follow the feel of how that boat's going to roll and move and then turn, like you're saying, Tony, to keep the line tight as the skier's coming through the wake, through the ramp. The safety aspect of that is to make sure that the line is tight all the way through the entire pull, so the skier's not falling.
But not too tight as to draw the skier away from the bottom right-hand corner, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have the chance to pass.
Yeah, they all have three jumps.
I think if there's a minor veer away, that would be safer than getting pulled into the ramp, because that's when the skier is at danger, is at risk.
All right, then. We've taken a real deep dive in slalom and jump. I mean, we won't talk about tricks so much, but unless you want to offer anything more than what we already know about tricks, which is just basically just set the boat speed and just keep a halfway decent straight path.
Yeah, that's it, Tony. There is nowadays, you know, you have to be on the ball, because most of the high-end trickers want to change their speed in the middle of their hand pass. Usually six flips and then down so many points.
Beep, beep.
Beep, 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 yeah.
Like the Roadrunner.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, good stuff. So it's fun. I really enjoy driving tricks, because, you know, the same attention that you're trying to put into putting into the other events, the trickers deserve just as much attention, as much energy into that trick ride as the slalom and jumpers do.
All right. And before we round off the podcast, have to ask you about BPMS. How have you adapted to that?
You know, I think it's amazing. We were just talking earlier with Keith and Jerry Jackson about having to have somebody on the camera watching you drive, move over 2 inches, move over an inch, move over a quarter an inch, and then maybe having some people that aren't qualified to be subjective about what's going on out there in the boat. You can self-monitor yourself to find what the center line is in the slalom course. And over time, when you're driving an event that may last for 2 hours, your mental GPS can slightly shift.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on zero, which you feel like a zero. And then after an hour or 45 minutes, that in my mind, sometimes that shifts slightly. And if I come back through the course and I find myself negative, positive, I make that adjustment then, and I refocus myself. And it allows me to do that on my own. It really hasn't changed the way I drive, but it gives me the kind of input to let me know where am I in the course based on center.
All right, then. We've had a long, long discussion about driving and all other pertinent aspects in the life of Scott Greenwood. But the one thing that I'm going to give you now is an opportunity to thank and acknowledge certain people that have been important in your path to where you are right now within the sport. So the mic's yours, sir.
Oh, gosh, Tony. Who would you start with? You know, my parents, my mother, my father. My father passed away 5 years ago in a few months, and he was kind of the inspiration. My mother, definitely someone that taught me detail in life, and I appreciate that very much in my driving.
Well, we mentioned Jay, haven't we?
Jay, for sure. Yeah, I guess the list goes on. We have, I have four siblings. I have a beautiful wife. I have Sam and Matthew Greenwood, great kids, and Brittany, as we said earlier, just a beautiful community around me. Kevin and Jenny Withrow that we built the lake with at Bull Neck. The list goes on. Dean Murphy, Jay Bennett, many, many mentors over the years. I probably forget several, but Tony, I know we got to go now, so I appreciate you giving me a little time here.
Not a problem, not a problem. We thank you. Thank you for being on this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot. And until the next episode, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.